operatives, he reported, are to return to Earth with our mission unfulfilled, or to destroy Moonbase's electrical power equipment, which will force them to surrender within a few hours. Foray's face on the cockpit's small screen looked perfectly composed. Only the slightest tremble in his voice hinted at the seething rage boiling within him. "And if you destroy the electrical equipment," Foray asked with exaggerated patience, "what happens to the people of Moonbase?" Hansen said, "They will be forced to surrender." 3 seconds passed. Foray asked, "Why will they be forced to surrender?" "Because without electricity, their air recycling system will shut down, and they will soon have no air to breathe." Another 3 seconds. "And once they surrender, do you have air for them to breathe? Do you have space aboard your ship to carry 2,000 men and women back to Earth?" Foray's voice rose to a snarl. "Or do you propose to let them all die, choking to death while you watch?" Hansen stared back evenly at the Secretary General's image. "I was merely stating what our options are, sir. I was not recommending a course of action." While waiting for Foray's response, Hansen glanced at Killifer, who seemed grimly amused. "Friggin' politicians want to have their cake and eat it, too," Killifer whispered. "And when they can't, they blame it on you." "Attend to me, Lieutenant," Foray snapped. "You were sent to Moonbase to take over its operation and remove its leaders from control. It now seems that you cannot accomplish that task."
"Not without destroying the base, sir," Hansen replied, "and killing everyone in it."
Foray seemed to mull the situation over.
"You say that Mrs. Brudenoy is willing to accompany you back to Earth?"
"To negotiate directly with you, yes, sir." The Secretary General toyed with his mustache. Then he asked, "And this news reporter, this Edie Elgin, she is still in Moonbase?"
"Apparently she intends to stay there. She says she does not wish to return with us."
Hansen thought he might be mistaken. It was hard to tell on this small screen. But Foray's face seemed to be getting quite red, as if he might explode into fury at any instant. But instead, the Secretary General said mildly, "Very well. Bring Mrs. Brudenoy back with you. Leave the news reporter. The mission is a failure, Lieutenant. A complete and utter failure." Then he added, "Except, of course, for the martyrdom of Captain Munasinghe." Touchdown plus 4 hours, 48 minutes.
"At least we don't have to pack anything," Joanna said as she sat at her delicate curved writing desk of light walnut and booted up her personal computer.
"Are you sure?" Lev Brudenoy asked from the doorway to their bedroom.
"Of course," she answered, without even glancing up at him. "We'll go to the house in Savannah. My God, I'll be able to go shopping again."
Brudenoy ambled into the living room and sat on one of the little Sheraton sofas. "Are you sure we'll get to Savannah?"
Joanna looked up from her computer. "What do you mean?"
"We're being carried Earthside on a military transport. It will land at the Peacekeeper base in Corsica. Has it occurred to you that we might be held there, incommunicado?"
What makes you think Foray would do that?"
Brudenoy shrugged. "It's easier to negotiate with someone when you have him in prison."
"Are you serious?"
"Very."
"Lev, I'm not some nobody that Foray can hide from public view. I'm Joanna Brudenoy. There'd be an uproar if he tried anything like that."
"Maybe. Maybe I'm just a worried old man, but..." Brudenoy ticked off on his fingers. "One, Foray has controlled the news media very effectively. Two, as far as everyone Earthside is concerned, you are at Moonbase. Foray isn't telling anyone that you're returning with the peacekeepers. Three, you would make a very good hostage."
"I'm sending word to Savannah right now," Joanna said. "The board of directors will know that I'm coming back with the peacekeepers."
"Can you trust Rashid to inform the board?"
Joanna stared at her husband for a long, silent moment. Then she nodded. "I don't think he'd have the guts to keep this information from the board, but just in case, I'll send the word to each individual board member."
"Good," said Brudenoy.
"And the news media, too." Brudnoy gave her a sad smile. Don't expect the brass band when we arrive in Corsica. Or reporters, either.
You really are a reporter for Global News, Doug said, feeling foolish even as the words left his lips.
I really am, said Edith Elgin, sitting in front of his desk. She was back in the coveralls that the peacekeepers had given her, sky blue with white trim. The color showed off her thick blonde hair very nicely, Doug thought. Her eyes were her best feature. Big, lustrous, emerald green eyes. Startling eyes. Eyes that made you want to believe whatever she told you.
Long legs. She must be almost as tall as I am.
Edith was studying Doug, too. She saw an earnest-looking six-footer in his mid-twenties, which she knew from checking his bio before coming to the moon. Olive skin, nice smile, dark hair, gray-blue eyes, broad shoulders. His coveralls were a couple of shades darker than her own.
I'm glad you decided to come into Moonbase, Doug said, although your presence here is a little awkward for us.
Awkward?
He made a gesture with both hands. You don't have any clothes except what you're wearing, and I'm not quite certain what to do with you now that you're here.
Do with me? I want to interview you and the others here. I want to beam your story back to the news media on Earth.
The media haven't paid any attention to us, Doug said. They even ignored our Declaration of Independence.
Declaration? You've declared independence?
5 days ago, when Foray told us he was sending peacekeepers here to take over the base.
I didn't hear a word about it.
Edith seemed genuinely shocked. You see what I mean, he said. The media have smothered us.
Well, they won't now, she said. Not with Global News's top personality on the scene.
Doug almost laughed.
She seemed serious and not at all embarrassed at describing herself that way.
There's more to it, though, he said, sobering at the thought.
More? What?
Well, he hesitated, then decided he might as well let her know.
You might be a spy.
A spy?
Edith's emerald eyes went wide. Then she burst into full-throated laughter.
You find that funny? Doug asked, feeling a little disconcerted. Man, I've never kept a secret in my life. Some spy.
Doug found himself grinning back at her, but he heard himself saying, look at it from my point of view. The peacekeepers just happened to bring a news reporter along with them. Once it becomes obvious that they can't muscle their way into Moonbase, this reporter talks her way into the base
by risking her neck, Edith pointed out.
By depending on the good graces of the Moonbase people, Doug countered.
And now this reporter is in your midst, and she's going to stay with you while the peacekeepers are leaving.
Doug nodded.
That doesn't make me a spy.
Probably not, but the thought has crossed my mind. Edith stared at him. He was pleasant and charming and very careful. He took his responsibilities seriously.
For one thing, Edith said, how would I get information back to Earth if I'm a spy?
In your news broadcasts.
Really?
In code, I guess. She could feel her brows knitting.
Are you serious, or are you just pulling my leg?
I'm serious, Doug said, although I've got to admit that the more I think about it, the less likely it all seems.
Good. I'm not a spy.
I hope not.
In fact, I can do you some good. I can get your story out. The media can't ignore me.
Doug nodded and decided that, whether she was a spy or not, she might be useful at that. And it's going to be fun showing her around Moonbase, he thought. Touchdown plus 8 hours, 3 minutes. Georges Foray took Rashid's call in his office atop the UN Secretariat building because his comfortable, luxurious apartment was a wreck. The Secretary General had spent long, agonized hours speaking with the timid lieutenant who had taken command of the Moonbase mission. Foray had felt his blood pressure rising, his innards burning with rage and frustration as the peacekeeper officer reluctantly admitted his failure to capture the base. Struggling to keep his temper under control, Foray had left his office and had his chauffeur drive him the 3 blocks through Manhattan's noise and filth to his penthouse apartment on the East River. He had given the driver the rest of the evening off,
smiled his usual condescending smile at the heavily armed doorman, and gone straight